know any quotes by people who've been knifed in the back and then kicked in the nut? He stopped and then continued. Kicked when they're lying on the ground, yes? Because that's what you need to be thinking about at the moment. The watch will be there, said Nut. But generally, their way of dealing with a complicated event is to get everyone lying on the ground, said Trev. That makes it simpler. I feel certain that we could beat any team at football, said Nut, soothingly. Trev looked around him in a desperate search for anyone who might have a grip. It doesn't work like that. It's not about the football. I don't think I want to see anyone hurt, said Juliet. Then you'll have to close your eyes, said Trev. Nut, you think that everything is going to be nice and sportsmanlike because that's how the new football has been designed, but it's the same old people out there. You know what I think? My dad says it won't look very good for Vetinari if the academicals lose, said Juliet. And will he be glad about that, said Trev. Well, I suppose, yes. But even Dad says, probably better to have bloody Vetinari than most of the buggers we've had. That was because the city worked, thought Trev. It had been a mess before Vetinari had taken over, and no one knew exactly how he'd done it. He'd got the watch working properly. He'd got the war between the dwarfs and the trolls sorted out. He let people do whatever they liked, provided they did whatever he liked. And above all, the city was crammed with people and money. Everyone wanted to live in Ankh Morpork. Could he really be shaken down because the new football went bad? Well, the answer was, of course, yes, because that's how people were. Trev mentioned this to Glenda as she came back from ushering the bemused Roz out of the range of more of Nut's philosophy. She looked at Trev and said, "Do you think Vetinari knows about this?" "Don't know," said Trev. "Well, I know he's supposed to have lots of spies, but I don't know whether they'd know about this." "Do you think someone ought to tell him?" said Glenda. Trev laughed. "What are you suggesting? That we go over to the palace, walk right up to him and say, 'Excuse us, mister, there are a few things that have escaped your attention.'" "Yes," said Glenda. "Thank you, Drumknot. That will be all for now," said Vetinari. "Yes, sir," said Drumknot. He nodded at Lady Margolotta and oiled his way noiselessly out of the room. "Havelock, I appreciate that Drumknot is very competent, but he always seems to me to be a rather strange little man." "Well, it would be a funny old world if we were all alike, madam, although I admit, not very funny if we were all like Drumknot. But he is loyal and excessively trustworthy," said Vetinari. "'Hm,' said her ladyship. "'Does he have much of a personal life? I believe that he collects different types of stationery," said Vetinari. "'I have sometimes speculated that he might change his life for the better should he meet a young lady willing to dress up as a manila envelope." They were on the balcony outside the oblong office, which offered a perfect view of the centre of the city while leaving the viewer almost invisible. "The Accord is going ahead," said Vetinari. "Certainly," said her ladyship. "Peace at last between dwarfs and trolls." Vetinari smiled. "The word peace is generally defined as a period of rest and rearmament before the next war. Were many assassinations necessary?" "Havelock, sometimes you are too direct." "I do beg your pardon. It's just that the progress of history requires butchers as well as shepherds." "There were no assassinations," said her ladyship. She turned her eyes upwards. "There was, however, a terrible mining accident and a rather unusual rock slide. But of course there is still the loco business to sort out. The dwarfs still want total extermination. How many orcs are there? Nobody knows. Perhaps Nut will be able to find them." "We must not have genocide," said Vetinari. "History has a way of repaying." "He is turning out to be quite a surprise." "So I understand. From the reports I have been receiving, all that the orcs were not, he is. But he will remain an orc underneath it all," said her ladyship. "I wonder what remains under all of us," said Vetinari. "You've taken a very big risk, you know," said Lady Margolotta. "Madam, this city is all risk, I assure you." "And power is a game of smoke and mirrors," said her ladyship, reaching for the wine. "Oddly enough, Commander Vimes reminds me of that nearly every day. No civil police force could hold out against an irate and resolute population. The trick is not to let them realise that, yes?" There was a knock at the door. It was Drumknot again. "I'm sorry to interrupt, sir, madam, but in these circumstances I thought it would be a good idea," he sniffed. "It's the lady with the pies." "Ah, Miss Sugarbean, legendary inventor of the famous ploughman's pie," said Vetinari. He glanced at her ladyship. and Mr. Nutt's friend. I have met her, Havelock. She harangued me. Yes, she does it very well. You feel as if you've had a nice cold bath. Do show her in, Drumknot. And there is a young man with her. I recognise him as Trevor Likely, son of the famous footballer Dave Likely, and I'm informed by her that she has indeed brought you a ploughman's pie. You would take untested food from a member of the public, said her ladyship, horrified. Certainly from this one, said Vetinari. There is no possible way that she would ever put poison in anything. Not out of respect for me, you understand, but out of respect for the food. Don't leave. I think you will find this interesting. The pie was still warm in Glenda's hands as she stepped into the oblong office. She herself almost froze at the sight of Lady Margolotta, but a certain robustness kicked in. "Do I have to curtsy?" she said. "Not unless you really feel the need." "We've come to warn you," said Trev. "Indeed," Vetinari raised an eyebrow. "Ankh-Morpork United will walk all over unseen academicals with great big boots on." "Oh, dear. Do you think that will be the case?"
"They're not your average players," Trev blurted out. "They're from the shove. They go armed."
"Ah, yes. Football as warfare," said Vetinari. "Well, thank you for telling me." Silence fell. Vetinari broke it by saying, "Was there anything else you would like to say?" He looked at the pie that Glenda was holding out in front of her like some kind of chastity device. "Can't you do something?" she said. "It's a game, Miss Sugarbean. Having suggested the match in the first place, what do you think I would look like if I intervened? There will, after all, be rules. There will, after all, be a referee."
"They won't care," said Trev.
"Then I suppose the watch will have to do its duty. And now, if you'll excuse me, I have affairs of state to attend to, but please leave the pie." "One moment," said her ladyship. "Why have you come to warn his lordship, young lady?" "Isn't that the sort of thing I ought to do?" said Glenda. "And you walked in, just like that. Well, the pie helped." "We have met before, you know," said her ladyship. She stared at Glenda, and Glenda stared back, and she finally managed, "Yes, I know, and I'm not frightened, and I'm not sorry." The battle of the stairs went on for a year too long, and then Lady Margolotta turned her head away sharply and said, "Well, you have got one of them right. But I'm sure I shall enjoy the pie and also the match." "Yes, yes," said Vetinari. "Thank you both for calling, but if you will excuse us, we do have matters of state to discuss." "Well," said Lady Margolotta, as the door shut behind them, "what type of people are you incubating in this city of yours, Havelock?" "I imagine some of the very best," said Vetinari. "Two common people can barge in on you without so much as an appointment, but with a pie," said Vetinari quickly. "You were expecting them." "Let us just say that I was not unduly surprised," said Vetinari. "I certainly know about the make-up of Ankh-Morpork United. So does the watch." "And you are going to let them into an arena with a bunch of old wizards who have promised not to do magic?" "A bunch of old wizards and Mr. Nutt," said Vetinari cheerfully. "Apparently he's very good at tactical planning." "I can't allow that. This is my city, Margolotta. There are no slaves in Ankh-Morpork." "He is my ward. I expect you will ignore that, though." "I have every intention of doing so. After all, it's only a game." "But a game is not about games. And what sort of game do you think you will get tomorrow?" "A war," said Vetinari. "And the thing about war is that it's about war." Lady Margolotta shot out her long sleeve, and a fine steel dagger was suddenly in her hand. "I suggest you cut it in half," said Vetinari, indicating the pie, "and I will choose which half to pick up." "But what if one half has more pickled onions than the other?" "Then I think that will be open to negotiation. Would you like some more wine?" "Did you see that she tried to stare me down?" said Margolotta. "Yes," said Vetinari. "I saw that she succeeded." When Glenda and Trev got back to the Hippo, Nutt looked at them expectantly. "He hardly listened," said Trev. "Quite so," said Nutt. "I am confident of our success on the morrow. I am quite certain that we will be tactically supreme."
"I'm just glad I won't be playing, that's all," said Trev.
"Yes, Mr. Trev, that really is a great shame." From the nearby table, where last-minute adjustments were being made by the Football League, came the voice of somebody saying,
Nah, look, you still got it wrong. If a bloke from side B is closer to the goalkeeper... No, I tell a lie. If he's closer to the goal than the goalkeeper, then he surely puts one away there and then, stands to reason.
There was a sigh that could only have come from Ponder Stibbons.
No, I don't think you understand.
Another voice chipped in. If the goalkeeper is that far out of his goal, then he's a billock.
Look, let's start again, said another voice. Supposing I'm this bloke here.
Trev looked across and saw one of the men flick a screwed-up piece of paper across the table.
Like, I've kicked the ball that far, and this is me, this piece of paper. Then what?
He flicked the paper once again, which hit Ponder's pencil.
No, I've already explained that, and stop flicking bits of paper around. I find it very confusing.
But it must work if he dribbles on it, said a voice.
Hold on a minute, though, said yet another voice. What happens, right, if you get the ball in your own half of the field and run all the way, not passing it to anyone else, and get it into the net?
That would be perfectly legal, said Ponder.
Yeah, but there's no way that's going to happen, is there?
Said the man who had just flicked a soggy piece of paper and had enjoyed it so much that he'd flicked another one.
But if he tries and succeeds, it would be magnificent football, would it not? Said Ponder.
Where's our team? Said Trev, looking around.
I've suggested that they have an early night, said Ponder.
An early night for wizards is 2 o'clock in the morning, said Glenda.
I have also given instructions that the team are to have a special meal this evening, said Nut. On that note, Miss Glenda, I shall have to ask you to lock the night kitchen.
Stony silence hung over the dining room that evening.
I don't eat salads, said Bledlow Nobbs, no relation. They gives me the wind.
How can a man live without pasta? Said Bengo. This is barbaric.
I hope you notice that my plate is as barren as yours, gentlemen, said Ridcully. Mr. Nutt is training us, and I'm allowing Mr. Nutt the driver's seat. Nor is there to be any smoking this evening.
There was a chorus of dismay, and he raised his hand for silence.
Also, his instruction here...
He looked closer at Nutt's rather untidy writing and gave a little smile.
There is to be no sexual congress.
This did not meet with the reaction he had expected.
That means talking about it, doesn't it? Said the Chair of Indefinite Studies.
No, that's oral sex, said Rincewind.
No, that's listening to it.
Bengo Macarona sat with a dazed look on his face.
Now, I don't want any sneaking off for midnight snacks, said Ridcully. There are rules. Mrs. Whitlow and Miss Sugarbean have been told that I fully back Mr. Nutt's authority here. Surely you gentlemen could show some backbone. In an attempt to show solidarity with the rest of the team, said the lecturer in recent runes, I am led to believe that there is some cheese in the mousetrap in my room.
Ridcully was left all alone, with only the echo of falling chairs for company. The Arch-Chancellor repaired to his own room and tossed his hat onto its stand. There have to be rules, he said to himself, and there has to be a rule for them and a rule for me. He went to his 8-poster bed and opened the hatch containing the tobacco jar. It now contained a little note instead, saying, Dear Arch-Chancellor, in accordance with your ratification of Mr. Nutt's instructions that the faculty are not to be allowed food or the implements of smoking this evening, I've taken the liberty of clearing away your cigarettes and pipe tobacco. May I also mention that I have emptied the cool cupboard of the usual cold cuts and pickles to avoid temptation.
Bugger, said Ridcully under his breath.
He walked to his wardrobe and rummaged in the pocket of his smoking jacket, coming up with a note that said, In accordance with Mr. Nutt's rules, as ratified by yourself, Arch-Chancellor, and it was remarkable how reproachful Mrs. Whitlow could make her handwriting, I have taken the liberty of removing your emergency peppermints.
Change and decay, Ridcully declared to the night air. I am surrounded by traitors. They thwart me at every turn.
He wandered disconsolately past his bookcase and pulled out Bodry's Occult Companion, a book he knew by heart. And because he knew the book by heart, page 14 opened onto a neat little cavity, which contained a packet of extra-strong licorice mints, an ounce of Jolly Sailor tobacco, and a packet of Whizzlers, and, as it turned out, a small note. Dear Arch-Chancellor, I just didn't have the heart. Mrs. Whitlow. It seemed darker than usual. Generally, the Arch-Chancellor's rulings were obeyed, and it seemed to the members of Unseen Academicals that every door was closed, indeed slammed, as they searched for food. Every pantry was locked and spell-proofed. The team trudged helplessly from one hall to another.
"I do have some reheatable pasta in my room," said Bengo Macarona. My grandmother gave it to me before I came down here. It will keep for 10 years, and my grandmother says it will taste as good after 10 years as it does now. I regret that she may have been telling the truth.
If you get it, we could cook it up in my room, said the lecturer in recent runes.
If you like. It contains alligator testicles for nourishment. They are very popular at home.
I didn't know alligators had testicles, said the lecturer in recent runes. They haven't got them any more, said Bledlow Nobbs, no relation.
I've got a biscuit. We could share that out, said Ponder Stibbons. He was immediately pierced by their questioning gazes. No, he said, I am not going to countermand the Arch-Chancellor's orders any further than that. I would never hear the last of it, gentlemen. Without a hierarchy, we are nothing.
The librarian will have some bananas, said Rincewind.
Are you sure? Said Macarona.
I think the librarian has a motto in these cases. If you try to take my bananas from me, I will reclaim them from your cold, dead hands.
Trev, who had been lurking in the shadows, waited until the rumble of stomachs died away in the distance, and then hurried back and knocked on the bolted door of the knight's kitchen.
They've all met up, and they're headed for the library.
Good. I think he'll share his bananas with them, said Nut.
I don't really see the point, said Glenda.
The point is they are friends, partners in adversity. They are a team. That is football. You have to train a team to be a team, and I will have no problem with them having a very large breakfast in the morning.
Nut was changing, Trev thought.
Can I ask you a personal question, Mr. Nut?
Nearly all the questions people ask me are personal. Though do go ahead, Mr. Trev.
Well, all right. Sometimes you look big, and sometimes you look small. What's that all about?
It is something built into us, said Nut. I believe that it is a product of the morphic field contracting and expanding. It affects your perceptions.
When you're upset, you do look very small, said Glenda.
What size do I look now?
Pretty big, said Trev.
Good, said Nut, helping himself to a slice of pie. Tomorrow, I intend to look even bigger.
There's something else we have to do, said Trev. Pepe wants to help me. He thinks I'm going to play football.
Well, you are going to play football, said Nut.
No, you know this. I promised my old mum, and you can't break a promise to your old mum, God's rest her soul.
Do you have keys to the wine cellar, Glenda?
Do you think I'd tell you, Trev, likely?
Thought not. I want 2 bottles of best brandy, and could you all come with me, please? I think Pepe means well, but he, well, you know him. It's midnight and everything.
I think I know Pepe, said Glenda.
There was a guard on the rear door of Shatter, but before he could even think of turning away Trev and his bodyguards, Pepe appeared.
"Call, 3 chums, I must be very frightening," he said, leering. "Hello, chums, got the brandy?"
"Yes, what's this all about, Pepe? You've been putting the willies up Trev," said Glenda.
"I never have. I hardly ever put the willies up anyone these days. I just told him he was going to play in the football."
"I promised my old mum," said Trev, clinging to the declaration as if it were a tiny raft in a choppy sea.
"But you've got a star in your hand and you don't have much of a choice."
Trev looked at his palm.
"Just lot of lines."
"Well, there's them that has the sight, and there again there's them that don't. I'm one of those that have. It's metaphorical, see? But all it is that I would like to give you a little something that may be of use to you tomorrow."
"What am I saying?"
"It might damn well save your life," said Pepe. "It'll certainly save your marriage. I'm sure the ladies here would like to think that us at Shatter have done the best for you."
"For what it's worth, Trev, I trust Pepe," said Glenda.
"And this is Mr. Nut," said Trev. "He's a friend."
"Yeah, I know what Mr. Nut is," said Pepe. "And you can come too. I'm pleased to make your acquaintance."
He turned to Glenda.
"You girls stay here, miss," he said. "This is no errand for a lady."
He ushered the boys into the gloom.
"What I'm going to show you, gentlemen, is top secret, and if you cross me, Trev Likely, I will do things that will make Andy Shank look like a playground bully."
"Andy was a playground bully," said Trev, as they reached what was clearly a forge.
"Micromail," said Pepe with satisfaction. "The world hasn't seen the half of it yet."
"It looks just like fine chain mail," said Nut.
"It's strange stuff," said the dwarf. "I can give you a vest and a pair of shorts, and they better both come back here, boy. Otherwise, said implications will be performed on your arse, and I ain't kidding. This stuff isn't just for making the girls look pretty. You would be amazed what it can do with just a little change in the alloy."
He pointed to a glistening heap.
"It's as light as a feather, and doesn't chafe, you know."
"And what else does it do?"
I'll show you in a minute. Slip on a pair of the shorts.
What, here? Said Trev.
Somehow, Pepe looked like a small demon by the light of the forge.
Oh, look at Mr. Bashful, said Pepe. Just pull a pair on over your trousers for now, and I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll even turn my back while you're doing that.
He looked away, fiddling with the tools beside the anvil.
Got them on,
he said, after listening to a few minutes of heavy breathing.
Yeah, they feel all right.
Okay, said Pepe. Could you just wait here one moment?
He disappeared into the darkness, and, after a succession of strange noises, walked back into view slowly and awkwardly.
"What's that you're wearing, Pepe?" said Trev. "It looks like a mass of cushions to me."
"Oh, just a bit of protection," said Pepe. "Now, if you could just go back a little way, Mr. Nutt, and, Trev, if you could oblige me by putting your hands on your head, it just helps to get the measurements right."
He turned his back on them.
"Okay, Trevor, are your hands on your head?"
"Yeah, yeah."
At which point Pepe spun round and hit him full force in the groin with a 24-pound sledgehammer. Surprisingly, the only effect was to send Pepe crashing into the opposite wall.
"Perfect!"
said his voice, muffled by the padding. Morning came, but it seemed to Glenda that there was no night and no day, no work and no play. There was just football, ahead of them all, drawing them together. In the great hall, the team had a table all to themselves, servants and wizards side by side, filling up as only Unseen University could. Football owned the day. Nothing was happening that wasn't about football. There were certainly no lectures. Of course, there never were, but at least today they weren't being attended because of the excitement about the upcoming match, rather than not being attended because no one wanted to go to them. And after a while, Glenda became aware of the sound which was coming from the city itself. There were crowds outside the university. There were crowds, even now, queuing to get into the Hippo. The sound of 100,000 people at one purpose rose like the buzz of a distant swarm. Glenda went back to the sanctuary of the night kitchen and tried to pass some time by doing some baking, but the dough fell from her fingers.
"Are you upset?" said Juliet.
"I hope we're going to win," said Glenda.
"Well, of course we're going to win,"
said Juliet. "That's all very well up until the time we lose," said Glenda.
"Yes, who's that?"
The door was pushed open and Pepe stepped in, looking smarter than usual.
"Hello, ladies," he said. "Got a little message for you. How was you expecting to watch the match?"
"Just so long as we can get close," said Glenda.
"Tell you what, then," said Pepe. "Madame has got the best seats in the stadium. Nothing underhand, just open and above board bribery. Shatter has got to be seen out and about, you see. Got to keep micromail in the public eye."
"I'd love to,"
Juliet shouted, and even Glenda found that her automatic, unthinking cynicism was letting her down.
"There will be sherry," said Pepe.
"Will there be anyone famous there?" said Juliet.
Pepe walked over and prodded her gently in the chest and said,
"Yes, you, miss. Everyone wants to see Jules."
It seemed as if the clocks turned backwards. All watch leave had been suspended, but it was hard to see what crime there could be in streets where nobody could move. A flood of humanity, well, mostly humanity, poured towards the stadium, bounced off it and overflowed and backfilled more and more of the city. The game was in the Hippo, the crowd stretched back to Sator Square, and eventually the pressure of so many eyeballs on the hands of so many clocks moved time forwards. Only the team and Trev remained in the great hall, everyone else having left much earlier in a fruitless attempt at securing a seat. They milled around aimlessly, prodding the ball to one another until Ponder, Nutt and the Arch-Chancellor turned up.
"Well, big day, lads," said Ridcully. "Looks like there's going to be a nice day for it as well. They're all over there waiting for us to give them a show. I want you to approach this in the best traditions of Unseen University sportsmanship, which is to cheat whenever you're unobserved, although I fear that the chance of anyone being unobserved today is remote. But, in any case, I want you all to give it 110%.
"Excuse me, Arch-Chancellor," said Ponder Stibbons. "I understand the sense of what you are saying, but there is only 100%.
"Well, they could give it 110% if they tried harder," said Ridcully.
"Well, yes and no, sir, but in fact that would mean that you had just made the 100% bigger, while it would still be 100%. Besides, there is only so fast a man can run, only so high a man can jump. I just wanted to make the point."
"'Good point, well made,' said Ridcully, dismissing it instantly. He looked around at the faces. "'Ah, Mr. Likely, I suppose there is nothing I can do that would get you onto the team?' "'Dave Likely's boy playing for Unseen Academicals would be a bit of a feather in our cap, and I see my colleague Professor Rincewind has humorously already put a white one in his.'
"'Well, sir, you know how I'm fixed,' Trev mumbled.
"'Your old mum,' said Ridcully, nodding understandingly.
"'I promised her,' said Trev. "'I know she's passed away, but I'm certain that she still watches over me, sir.'
"'Well, that's nice and does you credit. Is there anything else that can be said? Let me think. Oh, yes, gentlemen. Mrs. Whitlow, as is her wont on these occasions, has organised her maids to dress up in appropriate costume and cheer us on from the sidelines.'
His face was a blank mask as he continued.
"'Mrs. Whitlow unaccountably takes an enthusiastic and uncharacteristically athletic part in these things. There will be high kicking, I am told, but if you are careful where you let your gaze fall, you should see nothing that will upset you too much.'
"'Excuse me, sir,' said Rincewind. "'Is it true that some of the men in Ankh-Morpork United are just a bunch of thugs from the shove?'
"'That might be a bit harsh,' Ridcully began.
"'Excuse me, sir,' said Trev. "'That is quite true.' I would say about half of them are honest cloggers, and the rest of them are bastards.
Well, I'm sure we will overcome, said Ridcully jovially.
I would also like to make a few comments before we leave, sir, said Nutt. A few words of advice, perhaps? In these few days, I have taught you everything I know, even if I do not know how I know it. As you know, I am an orc, and whatever else we were team players. You are playing, therefore, not as individuals, but as a team. I think it was von Houdenbrow who said,
"'I don't think we've got very much time to get through the crowds,' said Ridcully, who had been expecting this. "'Thank you, Mr. Nutt, but I really think we ought to get going.'
Those watching from above would have seen the cramped streets of the city waver as the red caterpillar that was the Unseen Academicals made its way to the ground. There were cheers and there were boos, and because this was Ankh-Morpork, usually the cheers and the booing were done alternately by everyone concerned. By the time Lance Constable Blue John of the Watch and two other trolls had forcibly prized open the gates against the pressure of bodies, the noise was just one great hammer of sound. The troll officers opened a path for them with the forethought and delicacy that has made police crowd control such a byword. It led to a fenced-off and heavily guarded area, in the centre of which was the Arch-Chancellor, formerly known as Dean, the entire team of Ankh-Morpork United, and His Grace the Duke of Ankh, Commander of the City Watch, Sir Samuel Vimes, with a face like a bad lunch.
"'What the hell are you clowns proposing to do to my city?' he demanded, and looked up at Vetinari in his box, in the middle of the stand.
He raised his voice.
"'I've been grafting like mad this last month on getting the KV Accord sorted out, and it turns out that just when the dwarfs and the trolls are shaking hands and being jolly good pals, you lot are starting another KV of your very own.' "'Oh, come now, Sam,' said Ridcully. "'It's only a jolly day out.'
"'People are queuing up at the gates,' said Vimes. "'The actual city gates. How much of this is magical?'
"'None, Sam, as far as we're aware. There will be no magic used during the game. This has been discussed and agreed, and the...
Ridcully swallowed hard.
"'The Arch-Chancellor of Brazenek University is making himself responsible for thaumic damping of the stadium.'
"'Then let me tell you this,' said the commander. "'None of my men will set a foot on the field of play, no matter what happens. Do I make myself clear?'
"'As crystal, Sam. Sorry, Arch-Chancellor. For now I am commander of the City Watch, not Sam, if it's all the same to you,' said Vimes. "'The whole damn city is an accident waiting to... No, an accident that already has happened, and anything that goes bad will get worse very quickly. I'm not going to have it said that the watch were the problem. Honestly, Mustrum, I really would have expected better from you.
That would be Arch-Chancellor, said Ridcully coldly.
As far as I'm concerned, said Vimes, this is a scuffle between rival gangs. Do you know what my job is, Arch-Chancellor? It's to keep the peace, and for two pins I'd arrest the whole boiling of you, but his lordship won't have it.
Ridcully coughed.
"'May I extend my congratulations, sir, on the very good work you've been doing in Coombe Valley?'
"'Thank you,' said Vimes.
"'And so I suspect you can imagine how cheerful I am to see you involved in another kind of war.'
The commander turned to Arch-Chancellor Henry.
"'Nice to see you again, sir.'
Policemen have a way of pronouncing the word sir as if they would really like to spell it cur.
"'It's good to see that you've moved up in the world.' I'm formally telling you that I'm laying down the law here, and as the referee, you have to pick it up.
Inside these lines, it's football. Step over the line, and it's me.